Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Thursday, February 7, 2019. Welcome back to the Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and nothing too significant on the court has happened since we last spoke, but the program that has won 14 consecutive Big 12 regular season titles in the news again. Kansas guard LeGerald Vick taking a personal leave of absence from the Jayhawks. The statement from Bill Self, it reads this way, quote, LeGerald has some personal matters that require his immediate attention, end quote. There is no timetable for a return. It's unclear if he will return. So Kansas going to be playing for at least a little while and possibly for the rest of the season without its second leading scorer and its third leading scorer. One of them, LeGerald Vick. The other, of course, Yudoka Azubuike. Norlander, please share your thoughts on this notable Big 12 development.
Kansas can be down to four eligible players, three of which are walk-ons, and I'm still going to wait and see that they don't win the Big 12. I'm not stepping off this. Gary Bedore, who covers the team locally, also reported Thursday night that he spoke with Vick's mother. LeGerald Vick is heading to your city, GP. He has been called back home for some sort of important, urgent matter having to do with his family. Hopefully, all is not exceedingly terrible. Who knows what the actual reason for him having to return to see his mother is at this point, but clearly urgent enough where he is stepping away, and Kansas has just, they have no more red shirts to burn. They don't have any depth. You know, from a personal standpoint, you hope that things are okay and okay quickly for Vick and whatever he is going through. But from a basketball affected standpoint, just, you know, the hits continue to come for Kansas, and more than ever, I'll say this, more than ever, not only does it look like they're going to slip from the pack here in the Big 12, but if things really turn and they don't have Vick for, you know, 2 weeks, who knows if it's going to be 3 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we don't know. When you look at how they have performed without Azubuike, and then if they continue to do so without Vick, they're not only going to be not on the one or the two line for like the first time in forever, but a three or a four is going to be suddenly a hard ask because the losses just keep continuing to mount here, and they got to prove they can win on the road.
You know, this is a team that was already 2-4 in its past six games, so they have not been playing well even with LeGerald Vick, and now you take him as an option off the table for at least a game, and you know, at this point, it's unclear how long. I can't imagine how anybody could spin that into a positive. I will point this out only because it's true. He did on Tuesday night in that loss at Kansas State play a season-low 19 minutes. I'm not telling you one has anything to do with the other, but I do think it's worth pointing out this is happening just 2 days after he played a season-low 19 minutes. Do you think one's got something to do with the other?
Maybe. I can't speculate if it does, GP, but if you're a Kansas fan, and we know we have plenty of them that listen to the pod, and we thank you for that, Jayhawks fans, you've supported a program here that has had like just general roster issues almost annually. And you know, we mentioned the Selby stuff recently, but you know, there was also Cheick Diallo, Cliff Alexander. I mean, you go on down the line, just it's
Billy
Preston, absolutely. That was a season ago.
This is something we could look up. We obviously didn't look it up, but like, who has had more roster issues for stuff that doesn't have something to do with injuries than Kansas in recent years?
I don't know, Parrish. Like, major conference? It would have to be, because frankly, like, you just almost never see this so abundant. I mean, kind of, as we record this pod, we've got Washington, Arizona playing out. Like, Arizona's had dudes who were going to go to Arizona and then they didn't and straight up didn't go to college. Don't know if you'd put that on the same page overall. I don't think that there is one. Now, listen, we've got a very astute listenership, and if there is a school that has had over the past decade, you know, five, six, seven, and we can't call it off the top of our domes, you'll let us know. But it does feel like KU is a comfortable leader in the clubhouse with this, and in one respect, it makes the streak all that more impressive, and the fact they always land with a one seed or two seed all that more impressive. But you know, a pattern is obviously established here, and you know, though the reasons may vary, I think that some, in fact, I don't think, I know that some coaches in the community of college basketball, you know, they don't feel too much sympathy for, as much as they respect Bill Self, they feel like Kansas might have been getting away with some stuff here, there, or wherever, for whatever means. And so now this is kind of the one season where it's all kind of just, it's a huge pendulum swing back the other way.
Well, I will say, after the FBI stuff launched, as long as we're speaking honestly, I was talking to a coach who is friends with Bill. And that coach said, and this is before the Sylvia D'Souza stuff came out, I would say this was probably November, like first month of last season, right after the FBI stuff broke. And that coach was, I mean, what he basically said was, listen, I love Bill, but I, you know, when is that school going to get roped into this stuff? Because everybody, and we've said this before, everybody was just waiting for Kansas to get roped into this one way or another. And then obviously the stuff came out in the federal trial. You had text messages with Bill and TJ Gasnola. You had the Curtis Townsend wiretap. You had the D'Souza stuff. So Kansas did ultimately get roped into it. But to your point about people not feeling, you know, sympathy for Kansas, that falls under the umbrella of, yeah, right or wrong. And, you know, fairly or unfairly, there was a perception in basketball circles that, I'll just borrow your phrase, that maybe Kansas had been getting away with stuff.
Yeah, and so, and the we're not saying the Vic stuff has anything to do with that. We don't know what it is, and by all, from what we can tell, it's just it is truly a family matter, and Kansas isn't going to release the details on that. KU does have a get-right game. We are not previewing Kansas's game this weekend because it's at home against Self's alma mater, against Oklahoma State, and then they play at TCU Big Monday. I mean, then we'll wait and see if they can win that. I don't know, but they should ideally win, but they did actually have issues with OSU last season. We'll see, but this is one weekend where Kansas actually has played in games of note for like 3-4 weekends in a row. This one, they are clearly zipping under the radar. The KU-OSU game wouldn't even make like a top 25 most intriguing list in what's a pretty solid Saturday in college hoops.
To update you on the Big 12 standings, right now all alone in first place, Kansas State at 7-2. Iowa State right behind them at 7-3. Then it's Baylor at 6-3. Texas Tech at 6-4. Kansas at 6-4. Nobody else in the league above 500. The current KenPom projections has Iowa State winning the league outright. But as always, we'll believe it when we see it because we haven't seen something like that for 14 consecutive years. So there are three games between top 20 teams this weekend. We're going to get to them next. But first, check this out. Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third-row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
So this is the first post-Super Bowl weekend of the college basketball season, and there are some great games on the schedule, most notably number 2 Duke at number 3 Virginia. Tip-off scheduled for 6 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. You can watch it on ESPN. 3 weeks ago, these teams played inside Cameron Indoor. You might remember, I was there. Zion murdered Jay Huff. Now they're going to play again at John Paul Jones Arena, which sounds like it was named after Led Zeppelin. Wasn't. Named for a totally different dude. Norlander, you're going to be there on a scale of 1 to let's go. How excited are you to be heading to Charlottesville this weekend?
I am, if we're going to go with the Led Zeppelin references, Fool in the Rain is my number one Zeppelin song. So that is my level of excitement. Just for the game, for sure, GP, I'm very excited for that. In a second here, I do want your Charlottesville tips, if you have any. But also, just as a side note here, I am an unabashed longtime Dave Matthews Band honk. Charlottesville is where the band made its name and where they got big. So I'm just excited to go to the homeland, so to speak, for DMB and dip my head into the famous bar that Matthews actually used to tend at when he formed the band. But I will not be going full-blown fanboy tourist. I have more self-respect than that. But that'll be a cool thing. And I'll try and squeeze in a little bit of time there. For the game, though, Parrish, we don't know. We are recording this Thursday night because you got to leave early to Reno. I got to leave early to Charlottesville. The status on Ty Jerome playing is still not known. It would be ironic if Duke did not having its point guard in the first matchup, then Virginia doesn't have his in the second, and if Virginia was able to win the way that Duke was, we'll wait and see on that. But Virginia's had a week off here between games, and hopefully that Jerome's back is gonna stand up and be pretty decent. Fascinated by the game because of how good Duke's defense has continued to be. This is the best shot-blocking team in the country. It's the second-best stealing team in the country, and now with a healthy Trey Jones, it does feel like it has the makings of a really great in-season game, just like a fantastic one. The first one was obviously so high quality, and you hope you do. I mean, to me, this feels like top five of the season without question. That, you know, along with Duke Gonzaga, Tennessee Gonzaga, Duke Virginia version one, and whatever else you want to throw in there. Perhaps Tennessee Kentucky in a week from now will also qualify. But I guess I'll just lay my pick out here, even though we're going to talk about it a little bit more. I'll go with Virginia because I think Virginia is the better team, and I'm going to pick them thinking that Jerome is going to play in the game. So I'll ride Virginia to the tune of, say, like 68, 65, something like that. But I'm most interested to see if, you know, Zion Williamson in the toughest road environment he's had yet, how big of a game that will he have, and will his success and or R.J. Barrett's dictate if Duke wins, because they combined, I think, for 57 points and like 25, 30 rebounds the first time around. It's going to be hard to replicate that in Charlottesville.
My only Charlottesville advice would be go see my buddy Pete Gillen. You need to go see Pete Gillen, Coach Gillen.
Okay.
Hey, still lives in.
I don't know if he's going to be at his house on Saturday, Paris. Like, I would think he's going to be calling a game for CBS Sports Network or something.
Let me text him and find out.
All right.
If not, you go to his house. Just hang out with him.
I'll just kind of pop in, swing by. That sounds like a heck of a plan.
I've never been to Charlottesville.
Oh,
it's one of the great places that I've never actually been. I want to get there someday, but I've never at this moment I've never been to Charlottesville. But it's by all accounts just an incredible place, and so I'm sure you're going to have a great weekend there. As for the game, these are the teams that are ranked first and second at KenPom. You think Virginia's better than Duke? I can see why you would. I would just sort of settle a little below that and go, I think these are comparable teams. Like, if you told me they're going to play this weekend, and then they're going to play in the title game of the ACC tournament, and then they're going to play again, either in the Final Four or national championship game, all of that sounds very reasonable. Like, when you're putting together a list of, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams that can win a national championship, people might differ on who you got 5, 6, 7. But I think everybody would have Virginia and Duke on their list. I would take the home team just because I think they're comparable. But, you know, keep in mind, I think this is true. Every team in the country at some point this season, except for Duke and Nevada, have been an underdog. And this will be the first time that Duke is an underdog. This season, they're projected by KenPom to lose by 5. That doesn't mean they'll be a 5-point underdog, but they are going to be an underdog in Charlottesville against Virginia, which means when we go to bed on Saturday night, wake up Sunday, the only team in the country that will have never been projected to lose a game will be, I believe, Nevada. And I think Duke is probably going to lose this game. I picked Duke at Cameron for the exact same reasons I picked Virginia at Virginia. When you give me comparable teams, I'll take home court advantage every time.
That's a really good stat. If you had asked me to guess, I might have needed five or six to get to that. I do know Tennessee is the only team not to lose a game in regulation this season. It only has one loss, and it fell to Kansas. Every other team that has a loss did so in 40 minutes. It took KU 45 to knock out UT. But how about that? That is that's intriguing. And Nevada, by the way, just real quick, because I know you're going out there, and it's a revenge game. You know, we don't have to fully break down the game here, but I did want to mention that you can catch GP on CBS Sports Network. What you need to do is you need to see Duke, Virginia at 6, and then get that second screen going, CBS Sports Network, New Mexico at Nevada. That's actually the revenge game. We don't have the line yet, and I don't have the projection in front of me. I'm going to guess in a revenge game, Jordan Caroline went for 40-12 at Colorado State. Caleb Martin had 25 on Wednesday night. Nevada continues to look tremendous, in my estimation, still undervalued by the metrics. This has been a top 10 team to me the entire season. I would think that line is going to be like 25 or 26 points. Maybe I'm a little high on that, but New Mexico's not that good, and Nevada is rolling. So GP gets the glory of going out there and seeing what I think might be a murder. But anyway.
I think it's going to be an assassination. Yeah. First off, Nevada's just way better than them. Like, when we that is the most bizarre outcome, perhaps, of this entire college basketball season. January 5th, New Mexico 85, Nevada 58. And you give Nevada the motivation to, go out and just want to absolutely murder these guys, and also give them home court advantage. The KenPom projected score is 86-66. I think they're going to beat them by 25 or 30. I mean, yeah. I am already preparing with our play-by-play and color analyst to have lots of conversations in the second half, the type of conversations you have when a game has kind of gotten out of hand.
Yeah, I think that's likely. But you know what? So maybe it might not be a great game, but you get to, you know what? Nevada's got Final Four potential this year, GP. You get to take a trip to Reno. I know it's not like top 20 destination in America, but this is, you mentioned you haven't been to Charlottesville. I believe you have never been to Reno, but
I've never been to Reno. Okay. I've obviously been to Nevada a bunch, like Las Vegas a bunch. Never been to Reno, but I am genuinely looking forward to it. It's going to be a pain in the ass to get there. I'll be traveling all day on Friday, but you know, they have turned that into a real college basketball environment, so I'm looking forward to that. I've known Mus for a long time, since well before he was even a college basketball coach. He was an assistant coach with the Memphis Grizzlies for a little while. I've known his wife Danielle for a long time, so I'm looking forward to seeing them, looking forward to see one of the best basketball teams in the country, looking forward to being in that sort of sold out environment. And then they've got nice gambling establishments as well. I might hit those on Friday night.
I would think that might be possible. Real quick, since we'll just Nevada's, it's pushing for that kind of one seed territory, but it's lacking high-end quality wins, and frankly, Gonzaga has the lead on that. Gonzaga will host St. Mary's once the Nevada game wraps, and Gonzaga's in the middle of San Francisco, St. Mary's back-to-back. They're both at home. Gonzaga is just running through the WCC, to an extent where it never has before. It's just blowing all of these teams out. So I'll be interested to see, and I think we're going to wind up talking about this, if the teams don't lose games by the end of the month, if Nevada is just going to just slot right in there into that two seed, no debate, and it's going to clearly be Gonzaga in the one. But both of those teams at least just deserve a quick mention on the pod with how dominant and awesome they have looked. I think it goes beyond their competition. I think if you put Nevada and you put Gonzaga into the Big 12, that both of those teams would be the best team in that league. I 100% believe that, but because they're in a bad league, they're out there, they're relevant, Parrish, but because you're not seeing them in high-profile games, kind of getting tossed to the side, I say don't discount them. Gonzaga's, I think, still fairly considered a top-five team, but Nevada, top 10. I can't see how you can make an argument otherwise at this stage.
It'd be great if they would have scheduled a home-and-home, Gonzaga and Nevada, to play it right around now. Memphis and Gonzaga used to do this they had similar goals. Memphis was running through CSA under John Calipari, Gonzaga running through the WCC with Mark Few, and then they would schedule a game in late January, February, either in Spokane or in Memphis, just to test each other. And more than that, honestly, to get back on the national radar, in a high-profile game, playing another ranked opponent, because The truth is, if you were Memphis back then, Gonzaga back then, Gonzaga right now, or Nevada right now, you don't get a high-profile game once your league schedule starts because the rest of your league is just grossly inferior to you. But we can't go back and redo the schedules now. I will say this: I don't think Nevada will lose again before Selection Sunday. I do not think Gonzaga will lose again before Selection Sunday, and I think Gonzaga is going to be a one seed, and I think Nevada is going to be a two.
Before we get to the next game, what I would serve back to you there is this. Nevada plays in the easier league, but I think they're more likely because Utah State is developing into a very, very solid team and potentially could have a tournament profile, whereas Gonzaga, yeah, they got to go to St. Mary's, but I consider Utah State to be a better team right now. If we set the over-under on 0.5 losses before Selection Sunday for both those schools, I would take the over because frankly, that's the smart money in that situation, but it's not out of the question that they can both run the table. And in that scenario, I believe that Gonzaga would be the one, Nevada would be the two, because there'd be so much other, there'd be stronger resumes elsewhere that I think that Nevada would get bumped off the one line, and it would prefer to stay the two, I believe, in the West than be shipped as a one elsewhere.
Utah State is, and that's you're smart to point that out, it's a top 40 KenPom team now. The projected score of Nevada at Utah State, that game's going to be on March 2nd, is actually just a 1-point Nevada win, 74-73. So, yeah, if I personally do not think Nevada is going to lose again, but if you told me, here's $5,000, bet it one way or another, Nevada loses a game or doesn't, I'd probably have to bet it on yes, they'll lose one somewhere, if only because that is statistically probable, even if I think they're going to be a one-loss team on Selection Sunday. Either way, let's move on. We both pick Virginia, right?
Yes, both riding with the Hoos.
All right. So the second game I wanted to get into, after we already got into all that other stuff, West Coast. We had a little West Coast excursion in between the list of games between two top 20 teams. Number 14, Villanova, is at number 10 Marquette on Saturday. Tip is scheduled for 2:30 Eastern. You can watch it on Fox. So, Norlander, I don't know if you noticed, but Villanova on Wednesday night improved to 10-0 in the Big East, and that's 10-0 in the Big East for the first time in school history. This is a school that has three national championship teams, 85, 2016, 2018. None of those teams started 10-0 in the Big East. So this Villanova team has done something no other Villanova team has ever done. They're going to go to 11-0, or is this where they take their first Big East loss?
I'll get to that in just a second. You beat me to the punch because I caught about 15, 20 minutes of Inside College Basketball on Wednesday night, which you were on, of course, on CBS Sports Network as I was doing a bottle feed. That stat came up, and I was like, there's no chance that's true. I was like, at some point, Villanova, maybe not even in the past 4 years, just like they didn't have one 10-0 start, kind of an absurd stat. And here's another one for you, Parrish. How about this? The past 13 games between these teams, Villanova is 12-1. Like, even if you thought Villanova's gotten over on Marquette more times than not, like, didn't think it was to that much of a level of dominance. So I kind of keep that in mind here as Nova's been rolling and Marquette's coming off the home loss to St. John's. Oh, man, this is going to be interesting. You know, Nova fouls less than any team in the Big East, and Marquette's a top 10 team in free throw percentage. I wonder if two things. One, if that comes into play at all, like, will Nova get in more foul trouble than normal? And if it does, like, you got to think Marquette's going to hit its foul shots. And then two, we've noted plenty of times, honestly, it's been like, I think, four or five times on the podcast in the past 6 weeks, that Villanova has gone back to being just exceedingly three-point happy. This was the offense that they set out to do, and they've achieved that. They take the second most threes of any team in college basketball to Savannah State, which is on another level. And yet Marquette's the better shooting three-point team, but doesn't take nearly as many. I wonder if Nova wants to bait Marquette into getting into that kind of game where we see like 45 trays jacked in this one. So I'll keep an eye on that. You asked for a prediction. I'll go with Marquette here. I'm really excited about that. I'm going to be in Seville. Like, I think I'll be able to watch this game, but I just don't know where I'm going to be. And, I'll obviously be doing hits on CBS HQ, Sports HQ leading up to that. But I'm eager to watch this game. I'll take the Golden Eagles, and in doing so, muddying up just a little bit of the Big East picture, which frankly could use getting a little bit more dirty, in my opinion. And but also in doing so, that would hurt Villanova's long-term chances, I think, at getting a 2 seed. Now, it would not knock them out, don't get me wrong. It'll be interesting to see where they land in advance of this game on the CBS bracket reveal, top 16, 12:30 on CBS. Give me Marquette. But tell me you're going to disagree here. I'd like to get some disagreement on the pod.
First, Norlander, when you're going to promote something that's on CBS, you have to say it's on CBS. It's America's most watched network. It's America's most awarded network. It's the network of stars.
I didn't want to step on your line there, so I was allowing you to come back in with your tagline.
So that reveal show, it's going to be on CBS. What time does it start on Saturday?
12:30, and that's the lead-in to Kentucky at Mississippi State at 1 o'clock on CBS. It's America's most watched network. It's the network of stars.
America's most awarded network.
Awarded network. old habits die.
America's most watched network and America's most awarded network, and it's also the network of stars.
Yes, that's true. And at 12:30, by the way, it's going to be the network of Jerry Palm. Shout out to Jerry. He's going to get some love there and reveal his seeds beyond the top 16 that the committee will show.
We've got someone who works with us at CBS Sports Network. Her name's Julie, and she's a Purdue grad, and she's in studio with us basically every week, right? And you know, we obviously, when we're on set, we're on set. When we're on camera, we're on camera. But outside of that, we're all sitting in what they call the bullpen, and we're all watching games together. We're all eating dinner together. We're all just sort of hanging out, making fun of Brent Stover. And Julie's a Purdue grad, and she could she's genuinely fired up for this weekend. And if you ask her why, it's because she's going to get to meet Jerry Palm for the first time.
Jerry, I like you, but I don't know if anyone should be that fired up to meet JP. I mean,
he's like, you know, Jerry Palm's coming in studio this weekend, right? I said, yes. I was like, the only thing that could make you happier than Jerry Palm coming in studio this weekend is Robbie Hummel coming in studio this weekend. She's fired up, so I can't wait to see Jerry Palm on America's Most Watched Network, America's Most Awarded Network, the network of stars. I would like to disagree with you, Norlander, and perhaps I should, given that Marquette, just as we talked about on Tuesday night's late podcast, you know, they just lost at home to St. John's. They're 16-2, last 18 games, 2 losses to St. John's. I'm not going to pick them to lose at home again. So I think it'll be a close game, a fun game. But I'm gonna take Marquette in a close game over Villanova. Villanova drops to 10-1 in the Big East, snaps its 11-game winning streak, because before it started Big East play, Villanova beat Connecticut, and that came right after a loss at Kansas. So they are 10-0 in the Big East, but they have an 11-game winning streak. I think all of that gets messed up on Saturday. And then, like you said, we've got a little bit of a Big East race. But let me just play the other side for a second. If Villanova does go to Milwaukee and win, then they're 11-0 in the Big East. Marquette would drop to 8-3 in the Big East. Nobody else is above 500 in the Big East. That'd be it. I mean, Villanova wins at Marquette. Oh, yeah. They're going to, like, barring they just decide to start forfeiting games, barring something like that, they're going to win another outright title.
Yes, that's a wrap. 100% if they pull that off, even if Marquette can get a revenge win a couple weeks later in Philly, doesn't matter. It's done. Like, yes, if that goes down, we are in complete agreement there. I'd prefer a little bit of drama. So it'd be better for the Big East and better for coverage in general. If Marquette can make it interesting, we'll see how they come back here and play Nova, which I don't think is by any means due for a loss. They had a weirdly tight game on Wednesday at home against a shorthanded Creighton team that really burned down that game and just kept it low scoring, and they still got the win, which was good. So maybe that was just a little bit of a flare to the senses, and they'll show up ready to play. But we'll both take Marquette.
That was my takeaway from the Wednesday night Villanova-Creighton game as well. We had that on our air on CBS Sports Network, so we were watching that, talked about it a lot. One way to look at that is, God, was Villanova struggling at home, going to overtime against a shorthanded Creighton team? Like, they needed a stop at the end of regulation even get to overtime. But the other side of it is they figured out a way to win when they didn't play well. They shot under 40% from the field, below 30% from three-point range. So they have been shooting the ball well from beyond the arc. We detailed that on a recent podcast. It was like taking 33 a game and making 41% of them, something like that. But in the past two games, wins over Georgetown and Creighton, they have not shot the ball well at all. So, it's one of those deals where we might look up on Saturday and go, well, of course Marquette blew them out. They haven't been playing well lately. But I thought that game on Wednesday night against Creighton, that's a game they would have lost early in the season. They didn't know how to win when they didn't play well early in the season, whether it was against Furman, Penn, whatever. If I'm Jay Wright, I'd like to play better. But I kind of do like the fact that we figured out how to win when we didn't play well. That's what good teams do. Nobody plays well all the time. But the good teams, they can win when they don't play well. Villanova figured out a way to get a win when they didn't play well at Creighton. But they're going to have to play well at Marquette. If they don't play well at Marquette, they'll lose by double digits. But I do think they'll play well, but I do think they lose a close game and we get at least a somewhat interesting Big East race. The third game and last game between two top 20 teams, it is number 19 Wisconsin at number 7 Michigan. It's at noon Eastern on Saturday. You can watch that on Fox. Wisconsin is on a 6-game winning streak. Michigan obviously has an incredible resume. I still have them top 5 in the top 25 and one spot ahead of Kentucky. And literally every day a Kentucky fan tweets me and tells me how stupid I am for doing that. But the truth is, and I bet you'll see this on the reveal show on Saturday, the truth is if you compare Michigan's resume to Kentucky's resume, it ain't even close. Like Michigan has had an awesome season, but they are just 4-2 in their past 6 games. This is a rematch from 3 weeks ago when Michigan lost 65-54 at the Kohl Center. That was Michigan's first loss of the season. What interests you about this one?
The fact that Wisconsin, since it started the winning streak, GP, with the Michigan win, every game since then, it's been 60 points or fewer in all the games it's played. Wisconsin has been operating like a top 5 defense in America over that stretch, and they've got a great balance here. It's not just that Ethan Happ is a first-team All-America, in my opinion. He obviously does not shoot threes. He doesn't even shoot mid-range J's or anything like that. But Wisconsin is a top 10 team in three-point percentage in college basketball. So what you have is this really dynamic big man, frankly, one of the 5 best players in Wisconsin history, indisputably, who's great around the rim, knows how to pass it, handles it well, gets his points in a lot of creative ways. And then they've got guys who can hit from deep. Dimitri Trice hit a couple of really needed threes in that road win against Minnesota, but Brad Davison, who is developing, frankly, kind of a sneaky under the radar reputation for being a little bit of a cheap shot artist. He shoots 43% from three. And Charles, I'm looking it up right here. Is there anyone else? I thought they had one more dude. Pritzel, of course. Pritzel shoots 40% from deep as well. So that balance is really intriguing. We'll see if it winds up being something necessary in the Michigan game. The fact that Michigan is at home, I think we're just bound to agree on this pick again, unfortunately. Now, Michigan, you know, just won easily at Rutgers on Tuesday. That came after a game in which it just didn't play well the previous Friday at Iowa. But I do think that Michigan will win this one, high-profile game. And if Wisconsin were to win it, then you could really enter into the conversation. Like, is Wisconsin now not only the best team in the Big Ten, but needs to be considered as a like real Final Four contender? And that's not something that was really out there kind of at all. But if you get the season sweep of Michigan, it's out there no matter what. That will be a very real thing if they can get there. But I've got the Wolverines winning and kind of comfortably. Like I like them along the lines of like. I think they'll crack 60 points against Wisconsin at home. So, you know, like 65-59, something like that, but it will be a definitive 6-point win.
Yeah, I've got Michigan winning, obviously, at home. I'm not going to pick against them. But I will say your point about Wisconsin, and I mentioned this on a podcast earlier this season. I think it was back in November. Randomly, I was talking to a Big Ten coach, head coach, and we were just talking about the league. I was picking his brain about this and about that. And he just sort of casually said, Wisconsin's the best team in our league. And I said, really? Because they weren't thought of that way. It was Michigan State. Everybody said Michigan State's the best team in the league, at least in the preseason. And he said, Wisconsin's the best team in the league. And I said, really? He said, oh, yeah. And he said, and it's not even close. And then, of course, Wisconsin – you know, they lose on a neutral to Virginia, lose at Marquette, lose at Western Kentucky, lose at home to Minnesota. You know, they started 10-4, and we weren't even talking about is Wisconsin best team in the Big Ten, but like, are you know, how good are they really? I mean, gee, they just went to Western Kentucky and lost. But this 6-game winning streak, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, 6-game winning streak includes wins over Michigan, Nebraska, Maryland. On Wednesday night, they go to Minnesota and win. My point being this, there was a time where I thought that Big Ten head coach was kind of crazy, or at least wrong about this very specific thing, but he might end up being right. Like maybe Wisconsin is the best team in the league. I don't think it'll ever be, you know, and it's not even close, but I can envision a scenario where we look up in, I don't know, 3 weeks and we go, yeah, Wisconsin is the best team in the Big Ten.
Yeah, that'd be something. It would also really bolster Happ's first team All-American credentials. I maintain that he is there. But, you know, Michigan's not without its really, really good players as well. And want to see if Xavier Simpson also has a particularly strong game. GP, just real quick, we're going to get to Houston, Cincy. Just for listeners, though, there's a number of teams this weekend that are in tricky spots. I get the sense that when we talk on Sunday, we might be hitting on a few teams that just took bad losses, because you have teams that are going on the road. Like Texas, I'm not going to say can't lose at West Virginia, but you just got a good win against Baylor. Like, don't slip up at West Virginia. Keep an eye on that. Things are probably going to get worse for Tim Miles. They got to go to Purdue. Purdue fans think they got a better team than Wisconsin. That's another debate. Maybe we'll have that, see if Purdue and Wisconsin can both win or not. I have heard from Purdue fans. I don't know if you have or not. Okay.
Every day I have. Okay. Every day. Purdue fans have turned into the new Kentucky fans. There was a time where Kentucky fans were like, when they're sitting there 2-2, the Wildcats against top 100 KenPom teams, like Kentucky fans were enraged that I had them ranked lower than other people had them ranked. And now they're mad again because I've got them 6 instead of 5. That according to Kentucky fans, that is the thing that makes me the biggest idiot in the world, that I have them 6 instead of 5. Behind Michigan instead ahead of Michigan, even though, as I pointed out, Michigan has the superior resume and it's not even close. But now Purdue fans are the ones that hate me the most as it relates strictly to the top 25 and 1. I hear from them every day. I hate them. I love Matt Painter. I love Jerry Palm. I love Julie at the office back CBS Sports Network. But Purdue fans are they're driving me nuts.
Well, Purdue fans, your moment is coming on the podcast. A home win over Nebraska might not necessitate discussion, but you do have a very intriguing team that's been beloved by the metrics most of the season, and your time is certainly coming. K-State plays at Baylor. If Baylor wins that at home, then the Big 12, the top of the race, it just gets that much more interesting. If K-State wins, then it's really creating a nice cushion of separation. Keep an eye on that. I did a thing on the Court Report GP on Wednesday. North Carolina State's RPI, I don't have the numbers in front of me. It's insane. Their disparity between their net ranking and their RPI ranking is by far the biggest of any top 50 net team, and to the point where, like, I'm talking like their RPI is like 125 or something insane like that. Like, if we didn't have the net and we had the RPI, I don't think NC State would be discussed as the NCAA tournament team that it is right now. They play at Pitt. They're going to be on the wrong side of the bubble, in my estimation, if they lose that game. Washington fans, we hear you. Let's just see what happens at Arizona State. We understand, and GP's going to break them into the rankings. That's a game on Saturday late. Can you get a win in Tempe? That would be huge. And then just Louisville, Virginia Tech, Auburn, all on the road. I don't think all three of those teams are going to win. And Auburn's trying to like keep even with LSU. So there's other interesting stuff, but it's kind of floating off the radar. I just happen to think, GP, when we talk on Sunday, we're going to have a bevy of interesting results, and we'll get good movement after we get this bracket reveal on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, just in the spirit of transparency, we're recording this, as you pointed out, on Thursday night while Washington, Arizona is – while they're playing. Like, it's on television in front of me right now. Washington at this moment is up 36-30. We do not know how that's going to end. But I do think if Washington is able to sweep the Arizona schools on the road this weekend, they will not only break into the top 25 and one, but they'll break in to the AP poll and the coaches poll on Monday. I do a weekly spot in Seattle with Ian Furness, and we talk a lot about Washington every week. And the truth is, if somebody wanted to rank Washington last week or right now, it's fine with me. They're, I believe, 18-4. Let me double check that.
They are
Yeah, okay, so they're 18-4, and really no bad losses. The losses are at Auburn, neutral to Minnesota. You can argue that's bad if you want, but I think Minnesota's a quality basketball team. At Gonzaga by a bucket, no shame there. And then a neutral to Virginia Tech. So they're 18-4, no bad losses. The problem for Washington is that, and it's not their fault, it's the Pac-12's fault. But the problem for Washington is they've got no great wins. I mean, there's not a single win to date over a top 50 KenPom team. And they do not play a top 50 KenPom team the rest of this season. And the reason is because they're the only top 50 KenPom team in the Pac-12. Now, at some point, like if they're 20-4 coming off road wins at Arizona and Arizona State, then there's going to be a spot for them. But if I were to put them in the top 25-1 right now, and feel free to double check this if you want listening at home, I believe they would be the only team in the top 25-1 that does not have a victory over a top 50 KenPom team.
Yeah, that's brutal. And by the way, like you mentioned, that it's not only that bad, but on Thursday night, Arizona State lost at home to Washington State. Like, honestly, I would love to incorporate more teams and talk, but the Pac-12, like, the only thing we can say about it is it's atrocious. Like, that is almost, I won't even say almost, like, Paris, Arizona State does not have a valid NCAA tournament profile at this moment when you even consider that its best win was at home against a Kansas team that's floundering. And so what you get here is not just your top 50 mark. Get this. Like, if Washington goes on to win this game at Arizona, there are no top 60 teams in the net aside from Washington. Arizona State entering Thursday was 61, and it is sure to plummet. And then Arizona was the next one at 64, and with the home loss to Washington, will drop even further. Probably won't have any in the top 70. So Washington is in a really tough spot. It's almost like it's Gonzaga in like a bad year kind of deal. Like, not just like the WCC, but like, just, you know, Gonzaga doesn't have like one of his better teams. That's what Washington finds itself right now. And frankly, the Pac-12, it's as a conference, it needs to start rooting for Washington to not win the auto bid, because it is definitely real. One bid Pac-12. I'm not saying it's more likely than not at this point, but that is a real true possibility here. So just keep that in mind as we go forward. The league's just terrible. California has the worst raw points per possession allowed defense in college basketball. Worse than Chicago State, worse than all the MEAC and SWAC teams, worse than all of that. It might wind up as the worst power conference team in the history of KenPom. It is a disaster that was going on in the Pac-12 right now. And I think you got to have significant turnover, not just with coaching stuff. We got to get to Arizona here before we get out of here for sure. But like, schools, ADs, I think they just got to have a come to Jesus moment, because it was bad leading into it, and then the league hasn't really done much in terms of having things break the right way to really up their resume and reputation whatsoever.
If you're looking for a bright spot, USC, Arizona, and Oregon all have like top 10 recruiting classes on the way, so it should get better, but it's a disaster right now. And I think we're going to continue to push two bid Southern, one bid Pac-12.
Yeah, I'm in that. Yes.
Two bid Southern, hashtag one bid Pac-12, because I don't know if you saw it. I know you saw it.
Of course. Go ahead. Let the people know. Yep, that's right. Yep. Wofford won.
Wofford Terriers went to Johnson City and beat East Tennessee State in overtime. So when we look up, like, that's a good win. That's a quad one win for Wofford.
It absolutely is. It's incredible. It really is incredible to see what they're doing. And, like, no joke, it's not just like, oh, this is great, it's a nice little mid-major team. No, they are in the thick of the at-large picture at this point. I think they've got insurance to lose one, maybe even two games, not just because of their net rating, but because of, frankly, how they're able to build. They have no bad losses. All the losses are good. And now, you know, three quad one wins, another three in quad two. The SoCon has the potential to get two, but again, it needs maybe East Tennessee. UNC Greensboro, by the way, has the fewest losses, only has three losses in that league, and then Furman's got the big win. So we'll wait and see. I'll do a SoCon segment every single podcast, my man. But yes, two bids is very much on the table.
We usually stay, like, the way this podcast goes is that I asked Norlander, I accept his advice and I request his advice, but I basically put a script together and then we follow it. We have obviously not done that at all on this podcast. We've been all over the place. So since we're already all over the place, let me ask you this, because you mentioned Wofford's net ranking, which is already top 30. And when it updates tomorrow morning, it should be better, coming off a road win at ETSU. I had a coach ask me this the other day. He said, do you think the selection committee, because you said Wofford's very much in the at-large conversation and not just because they're net ranking. This coach asked me, he said, do you think the selection committee is going to really lean on the net ranking as a way to legitimize the net ranking? In other words, if they create this algorithm that throws Wofford in the top 30 and then they leave Wofford out, if Wofford needs an at-large, it's like, well, then your algorithm sucks. Mm-hmm. You know, like your algorithm says it's a top 30 team. You say it's not. So, like, your algorithm needs to be fixed, because if you don't think Wofford belongs in the tournament, by definition, that means your algorithm's not any good. And I told him I could 100% see that they to legitimize the ranking, you lean on it more heavily than you would have in any other year leading up to this year. And I think that's great news for Wofford and anybody else with a very good net ranking.
I think so, too. And I had a Q&A go up with the selection committee chair, Bernard Muir, who's the AD at Stanford. And I asked a question similar to that. You know, are you prioritizing the net more than the other metrics that are on the team sheets? KenPom, Sagarin, BPI, KPI, strength of record. And gave me, frankly, maybe an accurate answer, but also a political answer in saying there is no one preference over the other. It just happens to be that the net is the primary sorting tool, is the buzz phrase yet again this season. It's going to be all over. Like 100% you're going to see it on the selection bracket reveal on Saturday, and that's fine. But I'm sorry. I until I see evidence otherwise, I don't believe that. One, because it's the new toy. It's going to get more attention, and the committee – and the NCAA are not blind or deaf to the fact that there has been increasing scrutiny on inclusion of mid-majors that are worthy of getting in at-large seasons, and then they don't, and then even some seeding issues as well. So it's not just Wofford, by the way. You know, Lipscomb's knocking on the door of being a top 30 team out of the ASUN. They haven't lost a league game yet, and it's because they've been good, but also they've gotten a lot of really convincing wins that it's helped them. I mentioned Utah State. That's a top 40 team, and that's another example of where we might see, if Utah State can get a win over Nevada, they might be included. You could have some mids benefit. Belmont might be another. If Murray State gets a hashtag two-bid OVC situation going, because Murray State, it doesn't have any quad one wins, it'll need the auto bid despite having a good record, and we want to see John Morant in the tournament. Belmont, though, it's kind of pushing up. It might also have a case there, so I'm very much keeping an eye on it, because it will be, frankly, a bit of a PR, I'm not going to say disaster, because frankly, it wouldn't be that, but it would be a bad look if we get to the bracket and we happen to see two or three teams going to Dayton that are, you know, near the bottom of the leagues, and we'll just, whether it's Wofford or if it's Utah State or if it's Belmont or frankly, Liberty is practically a top 50 team. Like if it's one of those teams and they're just not there, it's going to bring on criticism. But what it will also do, I have to acknowledge this, Parrish, it would also validate the committee's talking point that it's not emphasizing the net over any other. It's just a matter of what approach they want to take. But I think that they can't help but be at least unintentionally influenced by the shiny new ranking they have this year.
I think they have to be. I mean, otherwise, it's just they make it too easy for the people. You know, people are preconditioned to just bash them anyway. But you make it very easy if you create an algorithm, put all this time, all this money into it, and then on Selection Sunday, when you wake up, it's got Buffalo at 19. Like, think about this. Buffalo doesn't win the MAC tournament. Wofford doesn't win the Southern Conference tournament. Lipscomb doesn't win the Atlantic Sun tournament. But they're all top 30 net teams. What are you going to do? If you leak them out, then all it does is set people up to go, A, you're being unfair, and B, your algorithm sucks.
Yeah, if this is still showing you that they are of top 30 quality and you're still not putting them in, then you need to completely, you know, blow up the committee process in general. I hope we don't get to that point, but we'll wait and see with that.
One last game to get to. You mentioned it earlier. It is on Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern tip. It's going to be number 25, Cincinnati at number 12, Houston. Cincinnati and Houston both won on the road on Thursday night. Cincinnati at UCF. I believe it was convincingly.
Yeah, it was their game. Yes, I would say it was another strong, convincing Houston win, elite defensive team. And if it's – yes, and I'm in – I think I drive the Houston bus, by the way. I think that is a top 10 team. I've thought that for about 2-3 weeks now. It continues to win. Perhaps it'll get more spread respect if it can win in kind of a, like, it's the biggest game by far on Sunday. We'll see. But this is just, you know, worth bringing up because they're both ranked, but two huge American Athletic Conference programs that are vying for respectable seeds. Cincinnati, if it can win this one at home, it would do itself a lot of good here because it took a long time to get into the rankings because, frankly, the opponents it had beat, and it's relatively weak strength of schedule versus what we've seen with Cincinnati in some recent years.
So it was Houston winning at UCF 77-68 on Thursday night. Cincinnati was at Memphis, down at the half, down in the second half. They go on like 11-12-0 run late, and they get out of there with a five-point victory. The final score was 69-64. And so now you get a Houston team that's 9-1 in the AAC against a Cincinnati team that's 9-1 in the AAC. The game is going to be played at Houston. So it is Cincinnati at Houston. You taking the home team? I'm sure you are, right? You
I am. Sorry, I thought I had it in my notes here. Houston dash Cincinnati. So I thought Cincy had the home floor. No, I got to take Houston in that spot. And if Cincinnati won, then that'd be a hell of a thing. I'm keeping an eye. I'm taking Houston. I'm presuming you will as well. Houston ranked seventh in the net as of Thursday. Frankly, I'm not going to get too into this now because I know I'll repeat myself. I do it every year. Lack of losses has to mean something. And if Houston can get to a point where it's like 24-1, 25-1, I'm sorry. Like, it's got to be considered a one seed or just borderline. Right there with Gonzaga, Nevada, the winner of Virginia, Duke, Tennessee. It's got to be up there. And just because of its conference affiliation, just the way that Nevada and Gonzaga necessarily won't be held back, we shouldn't hold back Houston either at this point. It will, if it beats Cincinnati, it'll be, I believe, 4-1, 5-1 in quad one games and undefeated with like 8 opportunities in quad two. So it's, I don't think it's going to get a one, GP. Don't get me wrong, but that would be just a hell of a story if we look up in mid February and the Houston Cougars, who were not expected to be this good or anywhere even close to it after losing a player of the caliber of Rob Gray last season, you look up and it's just kind of, it's crazy what Kelvin Sampson has been able to do. Very intriguing game on Sunday.
I've got Houston in the top 10 or the top 25-1 because this is something you and I agree on. Losses have to matter. Lack of losses have to matter. 90% of the tweets I get from people about the top 25-1 are just dumb. But then another 5% are people who only focus on wins. They'll say, we beat this team, and this team. Why don't you have us wherever? And the answer, I almost always ignore it unless I can just end the conversation with one tweet because I've just decided a long time ago I'm not going to debate people about rankings on Twitter back and forth, you know, however many characters at a time. But the answer is almost always, well, what about your losses? Like, let's not just focus on your wins. Let's focus on your losses. Like, your losses have to matter. And Houston's got one loss, and it was a block charge situation in the final seconds. And if a official, and I think he got the call right, like I think it was a charge, but if he'd have called it a block, it'd have been a 3-point play, and Houston would have won that game. They'd be sitting here right now 23-0. As it is, they're 22-1. And I know that they don't have these big signature wins, like they haven't gone out and beaten Duke or Virginia or Gonzaga or Tennessee because they haven't played them, but they do have a win over LSU. And, you know, winning at UCF. Okay, so that's not going to move the needle for most people, but that's a win. That's a quadrant one win.
It is, yes.
And good teams lose games like that all the time. And so I know that it's not like a win over a top 10 team that's going to, you know, put you on the lead of SportsCenter, but never losing those types of games, that's not something most teams in this country are able to do. Unless they're legitimate, like top five, top 10 teams. And that's why I think Houston, you can reasonably call it a legitimate top 10 team.
Yeah, no, they are. And if, you know, if you love the pod so much to stick around nearing the hour mark here and you just haven't seen Houston yet or much of Cincinnati, do watch. Jerron Cumberland for Cincinnati has just been a fantastic player as well this season. We'll see how he goes against, frankly, just a stud of a defensive team. That's a good one to keep an eye on and one of the four best games of the weekend, no question.
All right, real quick before we get out of here, news from the past couple of days. Arizona has, quote, initiated the process to terminate men's basketball assistant coach Mark Phelps while suspending him indefinitely, the school said in a statement on Wednesday. This is tied to some online coursework, fraudulent online coursework done for Sharif O'Neill, when he was committed to Arizona after the FBI stuff came out. Sharif O'Neal decommitted from Arizona, subsequently committed to UCLA, and he is redshirting the season because they found a heart ailment. He had heart surgery in recent months. He's expected to resume a basketball career at some point, but he's not playing right now. Either way, it's like not a good look for Arizona, even if Arizona made it clear that this is not tied to the federal investigation in any way. But what is true is this. Arizona has a basketball program that is run by Sean Miller and has been run at a successful level consistently by Sean Miller. But now three of his assistants have been tied to serious NCAA allegations. And two of them have been fired. Book Richardson fired, charged with crimes. Mark Phelps is in the process of being fired. And Joe Pasternak, the former assistant, again, has never been charged with anything, but has been accused of major rules violations, or at least agreeing to commit major rules violations. Like, that's tough, right? I mean, there's you and I both know Sean. We both like Sean, but it's not a great look.
Yes, it's not. There's a lot of stuff happening at Arizona right now. NCAA investigation underway. You've got, from what I understand, split factions among like what the school should do going forward, if it's sustainable to stick with Miller. A lot of factors will go into that. We don't know the timeline on when an NCAA investigation will not just even wrap, but like notice of allegation stuff that go public first. Like, there's a whole process we have to get through with that. And then Phelps, who, by the way, was suspended for like 5 days after the FBI stuff came out at the start of last season, having to do with a rules violation regarding a different Arizona player. So I don't know if like that was the first thing, don't do anything again, then they discovered this and it's just multiple issues, or if it's just whatever had to do with O'Neal, who is now out this season at UCLA because he had heart surgery, by the way. Regardless, it doesn't reflect well on Miller whatsoever at all. Three assistants, differing circumstances, but things have gotten interesting and perhaps a bit accelerated with Arizona at this point. I asked Goodman, our buddy Jeff Goodman. I do a radio show every Thursday, an online radio show with IMG and College Sports Now, and I had him on. Goodman graduated from Arizona, and I think actually the Arizona fan base hates him more than any other. He went to the school there, but that's Goodman for you. But I said, you know what? Like, I know this is an easy question to answer. There are more details, but I'm just going to ask, like, just yes or no. When we start next season, will Sean Miller be coaching the Arizona Wildcats? And he said, well, first of all, I didn't think there was any chance he was going to return after what we went through almost a year ago last season with all that stuff. But he said no. And from where we sit right now, I agree with him. I think the looming threat of an NCAA investigation, Yahoo Sports has reported that if and when, even though the coaches have pled guilty to the third trial, you have not had Merle Coat and Christian Dawkins plead guilty to that second trial. And Christian Dawkins' lawyer does not intend to do that. And what could happen, this is per Yahoo Sports reporting, like Sean Miller could get called to the stand in New York this year. And like, no matter what he says, like, as a university, when you are dealing with Board of Regents and presidents, you do not want your coach in the headlines for having to have to fly to New York, speak on the stand, potentially have damning tapes or just uncomfortable tapes played. You factor all that in with frankly, I don't see how Sean Miller in Arizona don't get hit with a lack of institutional control charge. That's a major charge when you can clearly point to three assistants being under this parish. So with all that in mind, like, I lean more no than yes. I don't think that he will be coaching Arizona at the start of next season.
I lean more no than yes as well, because once the NCAA launches an investigation, particularly into a school that, I mean, we joked about it as the federal trial was unfolding. Like, every time there was a text message exchange, every time there was a wiretap, every time something was admitted in court, or maybe just introduced in court but not admitted, and perhaps I'm getting my phrases confused, but like, it was like Arizona, at least the perception among these people who were selling players the perception was Arizona was in willing to buy everybody. Like Brian Bowen, yeah, they'll do it. Javon Quinterly, yeah, they'll get it. Arizona's in for 50. Arizona will do this. You know, Larnell, for crying out loud. You know, like he's DeAndre Ayton's buddy. Got however much money it was.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of stuff allegedly there. And when the NCAA launches an investigation into that, they ain't going to find nothing. And when you've got assistants seemingly running wild, that's a problem. And then, God forbid, you get called on a stand. You got to testify under oath. There ain't I'll just say this. I don't think there's a coach in the country who consistently secures commitments from five-star players who wants to have to testify under oath. It's why back when, I don't know if you remember this, when Anthony Davis was in high school, the Chicago Sun-Times wrote a story like basically saying the father was paid to get him to go to Kentucky. It was a weird story and poorly sourced and not written well, and it never went anywhere. Like, it didn't say where the money came from or who paid whom. It was just like Anthony Davis's father paid so that Anthony Davis would go to Kentucky. And almost immediately, Anthony Davis's father was like, quoted, "I'm going to sue the Chicago Sun-Times." And one of the things I said back then was, he's not going to sue the Chicago Sun-Times, because the last thing anybody connected to Nike or Kentucky, and I'm not alleging anything went on. I'm just telling you the truth. The last thing anybody at Nike or Kentucky wants is an actual lawsuit where Nike officials, Kentucky coaches, anybody else connected to it has to testify under oath, because your answers might not jibe with you know, if you are going to tell the truth and nothing but the truth, you could end up in a bad spot.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, needless to say, they never sued the Chicago Sun-Times. It was just never going to happen. You're not going to put make yourself vulnerable in that way. And my point being, like, the last thing you want if you're Sean Miller is to have to testify under oath, because you can. And I'm not saying Sean's lied. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying you can lie to reporters. You can lie to your bosses. You lie under oath, you in a bad place. And I don't think Sean or anybody else who has been dealing with the stuff he's been dealing with wants to be put in that situation.
Yeah, last thing for me on this, and we can get out of here. It doesn't help Miller's case that Book Richardson pleaded guilty, because he is admitting not just to like breaking what has been deemed to be federal law with all of this stuff, but running afoul of his boss. Again, you were not able to contain your assistants. There are bad rulings coming Arizona's way. I don't see how there's not, frankly. And if there's not, then the NCAA, for as much as it can be treated like a pinata, like, I mean, I just don't see how they're not going to go after them when we see what's happened to the players. You know, to reset, we talked about in a couple podcasts ago with D'Souza. I just think that's an inevitability. And now it just is a matter of when that kind of stuff might happen. You know, Arizona has these executive boards that are meeting, discussing the future and possible tactics. I don't know if that accelerates any kind of timeline with Miller or not. Frankly, he's a hell of a coach, and Arizona, when it's better, like, it's not just better for the league, but better for college basketball. Like, I'm not rooting for Sean Miller to lose his job or anything like that, but I just think there's just, with what we see here, three assistants, NCAA formal investigation underway, a lot of noise around it. They're going to weigh the pros and the cons. They're probably going to weigh about how much they have to pay him, what legal stuff will follow. Hey, maybe he gets out of it. Maybe he does. But if you are making me say one way, I got to say no or yes. I just lean more no than yes that he is coaching in Tucson at the start of next season.
This podcast went way longer than I anticipated.
I know, Parrish. But you know what? Like, I hope the listeners do enjoy this, because I didn't think we'd go more than like 35 or 40. It did go long. I still got to finish packing. I'm guessing you got to finish packing. I think we still are married, I think.
I have to start packing. My poor wife she's just downstairs, I guess. I don't know what she's doing. But like, I really walk out of my door again tomorrow morning at 5:30.
I got home
at 6:30 p.m. and I'm walking out of my door again at 5:30 a.m.
You talk to me more than your wife. I don't know if that's an exaggeration.
No, it's not an exaggeration. On average, we go about 45 minutes three times a week. that's more face-to-face time than I've gotten with my wife, and certainly in the past week. Certainly. I saw her for about 10 minutes earlier.
All right. Let's wrap this. We're going to talk Sunday. I'll be in Chapel Hill for an advance of Virginia UNC. You'll be back home. Listeners.
Back home for like 12 hours.
So squeezing the time as best you can. Hope everyone enjoyed what was a sure. You know what, though? I like when we go off the beaten path every now and then, and I think that that our listeners do as well.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle. He's a legend. Shouts to Larnell. He could be in a federal trial any day now. Remember to go subscribe to the College on College Basketball podcast over at Apple Podcasts if you haven't done that yet. If you have done it, thank you sincerely. It means a lot. Our bosses notice, and it helps it, you know, show up when people are searching for podcasts that are connected to college sports. You know, we are, after every episode, right there at the top, if not number one, certainly in the top two, usually number one. It's the most listened to podcast, college basketball podcast in the country. You guys have helped us turn it into that. So thank you if you've already subscribed. If you haven't, please go do so. Rate it 5 stars. Leave a nice comment. I'll owe you forever. I'll even like it to the best of my ability. And like Norlanda said, we're going to talk to you again on Sunday night. Till then, take care.